Broadcasting from the Co-Certified Studios in beautiful downtown Burbank, this is National Bugle Radio.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Today's Wednesday, and I have on with me Mark Dankoff. Mark, welcome to the show.
Glad to be on. We have plenty to talk about, I trust, and I've been trying to catch up on this morning's news and to get some other things done, but we certainly have a number of things on the big board today at National Bugle that are well worth talking about or rehashing, either one.
Okay, well, just because I talked about it a lot yesterday and then it stays in the news, I'm just going to mention very briefly, you know, you had this business on the between the Covington High School kids and the American Indian wise tribal elder, and then of course the young black man preaching the Bible. You had that whole incident, which I guess is becoming known as the Smilocaust. whereby, yeah, the Covington kid, he's trying to smirk aside the Native Americans all over again, because you know they don't have any natural resistance to either smallpox germs or to the smiles of you know Catholic high school kids. Very vicious, but unless you have something to talk about, do you have any thoughts on that before we launch into our other topics?
Well, I will say one thing. It is clear from what I have seen in the mainstream media that there has been a deliberately false spin started in terms of who did what to whom and when, and very similar to the Chancellorsville thing, or I'm sorry, the Charlottesville thing, where the media was reporting all of the things that they wanted said with their spin on what happened. And we're totally disregarding all of the evidence from an eyewitness like you in regard to how this whole thing was deliberately provoked by the authorities, by the way. And it ended up having an outcome that was entirely predictable, which mainstream media could then run with to depict the Charlottesville people who were there with a legal permit to protest the removal of the Lee statue as criminals. And, of course, to give a free pass to Black Lives Matter and Antifa and a series of other openly red groups and pro-queer groups that had deliberately gathered and were waiting for these Charlottesville protesters when they were simply disbanding, as they had been told to do by the police, even though they had a legal permit to be doing what they were doing from the city. Charlottesville people peacefully disbanded, but then the police apparently deliberately escorted them into the very area where all of these radical leftists and homosexuals and pro-communist organizations would be. And then, of course, you had the melee that followed. It seems to me that in the way this whole thing, this latest incident has been spun, it's desired to underscore what mainstream media once underscored in regard to its version of bigotry, its version of extremism, and last but not least, diversion. Diverting the public from a relatively asinine story like this and the public failing to consider what the House of Representatives just passed by a 357-22 vote in this so-called NATO Support Act that has committed the United States with a Democratic House of Representatives, folks. Not one Democrat dissent in the so-called progressive left from these war policies. And David Stockman totally dissects all of the problems with this in his take on the NATO fetish among the progressive left. We took off antiwar.com today and posted on National Bugle. And I found it interesting that Stockman was apparently on MSNBC yesterday or 2 days ago, being interviewed by Zbigniew Brzezinski's daughter. And she was right with Stockman on some of the things he was saying that were very critical of the president's economic policies. But Stockman went on to say in that piece, which people can see on our big board today at nationalbugle.com, that once he's talking about the war party And once he started talking about the way in which Trump needed to be more aggressive and more assertive in bringing to the fore his America First issues and foreign policy, and among other things, getting this country literally out of NATO, both because it's not necessary anymore, the Soviet Union is dead, and also because it's a part of a $1 trillion a year expenditure scene that Dr. Stockman indicates very responsibly will bankrupt the country. And I think in another article some time ago, he basically forecast that the United States, by the end of the current decade, would have a $40 trillion national debt. And this is where Ms. Brzezinski apparently went absolutely bonkers in regard to trying to steer Stockman away from discussing this or trying to debunk the legitimacy of that. She made the mistake of asking him, so you really believe we should get out of NATO? And that, of course, as any good attorney will tell you, there are times when there are certain questions you don't ask. There's a time to talk and a time to keep your mouth shut. And when she phrased it that way, Stockman then proceeded to rehearse all of these arguments that are found today in his article on antiwar.com, which we've reposted at National Bugle.
And you've also posted the roll call vote, which I'm finding very, very interesting.
Yes.
And so I'm looking at the nays, 22 nays, all of them Republican. I do recognize Jim Jordan, who's got a rising profile among the nays, voted against it. And then there's 54 not voting, and I see Tulsi Gabbard did not vote on it. I don't know if she was not voting because she is out of town campaigning or what.
Yes.
Now, but the yays, okay, so you see young, what's her name, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She is.
Isn't that a fascinating vote?
Yes, and then the Palestinian lady with the foul mouth who called Donald Trump an MF. She voted yay. She's in favor of NATO. And then the Somali lady from Minnesota, something Omar, she voted in favor. So all the regular, the people that you would expect, like Adam Schiff or, who's that weird guy, Seward or Seawall from California? They're all voting in favor of this. And so the Democrats, the progressives, are all in favor of NATO all of a sudden. What a turnaround.
I think, really, when you look at this, Stockman refers to this as Trump derangement syndrome. I think he's basically right about that. He has a way with words as well as a way with numbers and economic analysis. All of these Democrats have Trump derangement syndrome. So whatever Mr. Trump wants to do economically or in terms of foreign policy or with NATO, national security policy, it seems that inevitably he's going to be opposed by these people, even if his arguments are sound. And even if people on the progressive left in the past have been supportive of at least some of the things he's been trying to do. But I think it goes more deeply than that. When you get into the whole business of money trails and paper trails and who it is that's financing and buying federal elections in this country, one of the fascinating things and disturbing things that I learned when I was running in this U.S. Senate race in Delaware in 2000 against Bill Roth and Tom Carper is that when you see a tremendous overlap in funding of major party candidates in a key federal race, this tells us one thing, and that is that there are certain corporate interests, multinational corporate interests, and inevitably Zionist interests and Israeli interests that come into play in a way that suggests that when you're talking about left and right in this country, as the mainstream media uses those terms, inevitably, when it comes to this so-called bipartisan post-World War II policy, this is an older model that is still being used. used by the advocates of these extreme policies on the part of both Republican neocons and so-called Democratic progressives, which gets back to what Philip Giraldi has told us quite recently in his piece on that subject. So this is an area that early on is of tremendous interest to me, not simply because, in my judgment, Stockman is absolutely right with all of the arguments that people can read in his article today, which we posted, as to why NATO is out obsolete, why we should get out of it, because it no longer makes any political, economic, or military sense to be involved in it. And we are still playing around with this notion that we're dealing with Joseph Stalin instead of Vladimir Putin, or that we're dealing with godless communism rather than a nationalistic Russia that has nowhere near the GNP that we and the other NATO countries have, that is basically reviving its nationalistic orientation, not with a communist ideology, but with a Russian Orthodox Christian cultural ideology that predates Jewish Bolshevism in that country. So keeping all of that in mind, Stockman amasses many, many good arguments tell us that basically Russia does not present the conventional military threat to Eastern Europe that it did in the days of the old Soviet Union. A terrific number of arguments made there by Stockman that really underscore his case. And then, of course, he goes on to discuss the puny GNP or GDP of Russia vis-a-vis both the United States and the NATO countries, and the notion that Russia is interested in attacking Western Europe in the way that would have been the case in the heyday of the old Soviet Union and the Cold War is simply ridiculous. And Stockman may have been hinting at this, but certainly you and I and others have been making the case that NATO is not only baggage we don't need anymore in terms of a legitimate American national defense. Europe no longer needs NATO because the old Soviet Union is dead and does not present a threat to them that was the case several generations ago. But all NATO, as you and I and others have pointed out, has become a global 911. Anywhere that the neocons and the so-called progressive left in the Democratic Party feels that needs to be invaded or attacked or subverted in a so-called regime change effort for democracy, quote unquote, that's where NATO comes in. Look at how it was used in Libya, just as one example. That was an atrocious effort, an illegal effort, an effort that resulted in the targeted assassination of Muammar Gaddafi with the open support, sardonically so, of Hillary Clinton, the then Secretary of State. So when you're looking at the amount of money involved in this, the end of the old Soviet Union, and last but not least, the entrance in NATO on the part of former Warsaw Pact countries, the entrance into NATO on the part of ex-Soviet republics, who can really believe, for example, that the United States should be going to war over the Ukraine or Montenegro or one of these countries where we have largely been sticking our noses into situations in Putin's backyard that we should not be sticking our noses into. And this is where Ted Galen Carpenter of the Cato Institute comes into play. He argued very effectively the other day that the United States, in fact, should reaffirm the Monroe Doctrine in regard to putting certain foreign powers on notice that we're not going to tolerate their monkey business in our hemisphere. But by the same token, reaffirming the age-old idea in a bygone age of deterrence rather than preemption that we would pledge not to be monkeying around in Mr. Putin's backyard and in certain places where the Chinese have their own vested interests and where we're amassing in their territory in the South China Sea. So this is basically where it is. Stockman provides all the numbers that enable us to see just how ridiculous this so-called progressive left vote was for the so-called NATO Support Act. And it really does underscore that when it comes to the war party, the multinational corporate interests that are involved in it, the armaments industry, and last but not least, the Israeli lobby, one can be forgiven for basically agreeing with George Wallace generations ago that when it comes to the Republican and Democratic parties, quote, there isn't a dime's bit of difference. So that's one area where I think we can all agree with Governor Wallace that he was absolutely correct. And all of this time later, we have reached a point where it doesn't really matter whether you're some zany progressive left type who has some pretty perverted ideas of what quote-unquote democracy is, or you're talking about neocons that may try to use the same kind of language to justify what they're doing, but nonetheless their policies result in the same interventionist militarism that characterizes these so-called progressive left people. It really underscores to me the absolute decline of the Democratic Party as far as its own constituency. And I think Paul Craig Roberts has noted this. The Democratic Party is now a full-fledged member of the war party. Mm-hmm. The Democratic Party, at least since the time of Clinton on forward, was a supporter of these globalist trade treaties that basically were injuring and defunding and delegitimizing many of these working-class Democrats in industrial cities that had been a part of their coalition from the time of Franklin Delano Roosevelt on forward.
Yeah, and not just that the Democrats are a full-fledged member of the war party, but they're the leading member. They lead it now. Regarding NATO, it's my feeling of obviously NATO is an anachronism. That, you know, it was designed to protect Western Europe from an aggressive Soviet Union. A Soviet Union that no longer exists. So it's an anachronism. I would even argue that when it was formed, when was it formed? 1948?
47 or 48, something 48. Like that.
I think it was an anachronism when it was formed, actually. Now, I think that because when the Soviet Union was genuinely aggressive and expansionist was in the 1920s, late 19-teens, right? When the original Bolsheviks were in charge, the Jewish Bolsheviks, Trotsky's whole idea was permanent revolution. You'd have a revolution that you could not have socialism in one country. You had to bring the entire globe under socialism, and they were very aggressive. And so you said there were Bolshevik revolutions in Hungary, completely Jewish led. In fact, George Mos, the professor at University of Wisconsin and also, I think, Jerusalem University, had said, Jewish to a man! The Hungarian Bolshevik Revolution was Jewish to a man. And in parts of Germany, in Bavaria, they had these Jewish-led Bolshevik revolutions in 1919. And I think, you know, in the 1920s, This was the position of Trotsky, and Trotsky was very important. I think that Stalin, his position was you can have socialism in one country, and he was, while I'm not trying to defend Stalin as a man of peace or anything like that, I think he was an opportunist, but I think he was risk averse. And if you look at World War II, well, he was not willing to take big risks, but when the opportunity was there, he would pounce. But whatever, we're just coming up on the break, and if you want to respond to that, you can respond on the other side of the break, or otherwise we can move on to new topics.
Very good.
Thank you. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anybody who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
And we are back. So what's next on our agenda, Mark?
Well, who knows what's next on our agenda? I heard yesterday from Ali Reza Hashemi, who is an Iranian journalist, and he was sending me his latest piece on this whole business of the detention of press television anchor Marzieh Hashemi in the United States. This is about day 11 of her official detention by the U.S. government.
And what she's charged. Remind us of the, so there's no charge, but what is she suspected of?
Well, as near as I can tell, and I'm relying on, of course, public sources for this, I have no inside information on why she's being. But the interesting thing is that when you look at the whole circumstance, she is an American citizen, a so-called Iranian-American citizen. She was born in Louisiana. She originally is Melanie Franklin. She went to LSU in Louisiana, which is where she got her basic education.
Is she African-American?
Press television refers to her as black.
Okay. So I assume I've seen her before. Yeah, I've seen her interview. I think she interviewed Congresswoman McKinney. Cynthia McKinney, some years ago. Wasn't she the anchor?
Yes, and she's interviewed me on more than one occasion.
Okay.
Or has had me on this press television debate show, where sometimes she has been the moderator of these debates. And she's an outstanding broadcaster, journalist, TV journalist, and very articulate lady. Kaveh Toghvai of TV is the other person that oftentimes ends up being the moderator when I'm on these debate shows on press television. But the long and the short of it is that she, as many of our listeners already know, she was detained in St. Louis by the FBI, as I understand it. She was on her way to Denver to visit a terminally ill brother.
Mm-hmm.
And in St. Louis, she had been involved in the filming of a Black Lives Matter documentary. What role she played in that, I don't know. I was going to suggest humorously that maybe David, as in David Duke, was upset with her for not being invited to be a part of the documentary up there in St. Louis. But at any rate, be that as it may, certainly it was a situation where she's detained, but there are no formal criminal charges. She is whisked off to a federal detention facility in Washington, D.C. There has been a terrific amount of international publicity on this, all of which paints the United States in the worst possible light. And it has been noted over and over again that we're talking about First and Fourth Amendment freedoms that in this case are being denied to an American citizen who by now has a lawyer. I don't know this gentleman. I've seen his name in the Of course, we don't know what the grand jury is looking at, but the rumor is that has been reported from time to time by press television via one of Marzieh Hashemi's sons is that they're looking at charging her or charging Press TV with illegitimate activities because the network is not registered as a foreign agent. Now, this is the same sort of thing that was being put on Russia today. And it's a situation where Ms. Hashemi has been in and out of the United States many, many times since she started working for Press Television in 2007, I believe. This is the first time that any of this has come up. And in this particular circumstance, her detention also begs the question as to when the administration and Mr. Pompeo and Mr. Bolton are going to follow Peter John and Robert Kennedy in insisting that the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee be registered as a foreign agent, and all of these Jewish publications and broadcasting outlets in the United States that specifically identify themselves with the Jewish state are not similarly ordered to register as foreign agents.
Absolutely.
There's a lot tied up in this, and not the least of which it's also being spun around the world, not just in Iran. There's a strong suspicion that Bolton and Pompeo are behind this. They have presumed, if that's true, then of course I presume they have run this by the President of the United States.
I don't know if you can make that presumption, but...
That's you're right. I mean, that's a situation we don't know, but it's being interpreted around the world as a ratcheting up in the Trump policies toward Iran that have been completely driven up to now by these neoconservatives, and that if that's true, you know, we're talking about something that almost has a wartime characteristic to it in regard to the blatant violations of the Constitution that in this case are being directed against an American citizen.
And we're coming up on the break, but there's also the case of the daughter of the founder of the Huawei company, the Chinese company.
Yeah, the Chinese lady, absolutely. Same issue.
Who, while Trump was in the midst of a meeting with the president of China, suddenly the Canadians arrest this woman, supposedly at the request of Americans who want her extradited. And I don't think that was Trump's plan. I think these are people trying to throw monkey wrenches into things. Well, let's talk about that on the other side of the break.
Very good.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anybody who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
And we are back. Well, you know, Mark, I was never particularly a fan of Barack Obama. I give him at least a little bit of credit for being less belligerent than either John McCain certainly was, or I think it's probably safe to assume that Mitt Romney would have been. And he did not buckle completely to pressure to get into a war with Iran. There was this episode, I believe, in 2015, where, was it 2015 or 2016? Perhaps it was 2016, where there had been a proposal for a ceasefire in Syria, and it would involve the Syrian government, it would involve, you know, the Russian Air Force, which was there already, so this must have been 2016, and after a three-week ceasefire, then it would lead to coordination of you know, the military information, coordinating, sharing military information on the whereabouts of ISIS. And this was something that John Kerry apparently had negotiated with Sergei Lavrov at the request of President Obama. Well, no sooner does that happen than you had this what was it, supposedly accidental bombing of the an airbase in Syria, killing a whole bunch of, what, something like 80 Syrians. And this was almost certainly a move by people within the military or within the intelligence community to undermine any possibility of cooperation and perhaps and potential rapprochement between the United States on the one hand and Russia and, by extension, Iran on the other. So there is this derangement syndrome. And so I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if what you're describing with what I was describing with the Chinese woman and what you're describing with perhaps Pompeo and Bolton being involved, this could be deep state. This could be to undermine President Trump's determination to withdraw troops from Syria, because of course the new sticking point isn't the existence of ISIS, it's the existence of Iranian military in Syria, which Israel has been attacking Syria nonstop. They've been bombing Syria on a daily basis for, what, 18 months or so, 2 years?
Yes, and this, again, has happened in the last 48 hours with Israeli missile strikes near Damascus itself. We also duly note that the Syrians have had to make some additional conventional military deployments in Idlib and Homa provinces in the west due to these ongoing machinations of these Sunni Wahhabic terror groups that the United States and Israel and Saudi have been supporting all along, deliberately so, and importing into Syria in an attempt to overthrow that government. So this gets into the same types of things that we were talking about in regard to the so-called NATO Support Act. The United States has no legal basis whatsoever to be in Syria. We're in Syria because the Israelis and the Saudis want us in Syria. They both have their own reasons for wanting Assad destroyed. Basically, he is an Alawite Shia president, and the Saudis would love to have a Sunni there. The Israelis, of course, want Assad's regime done away with to somehow begin to take a piece out of the so-called Shia Crescent that runs from Iran to Syria to Hezbollah in Lebanon. There's another angle on this as well, and I think you've already touched upon it, intended or not, and that is to extent our activities in Syria and our what appears to be our upcoming activities in actually going to war with Iran if the withdrawal from the P5 plus one multilateral treaty doesn't work, if the economic sanctions against Iran don't work, if ultimately, despite our best attempts at continuing to subvert Mr. Trump's stated desire to get out of Syria, we then discover that if none of that happens, then end of Assad regime or not, presumably at some point the United States and Israel will attack Iran. And this is not simply the desire of the Israelis to destroy and to remove the most powerful regional force in the Middle East that is pro-Palestinian and that opposes Israeli hegemony in the region. But I think there's an anti-Russian dimension to this as well, both in Syria and in Iran, where in addition to these illegal activities that we've been conducting in the Ukraine, overthrowing a legitimately constituted government almost 5 years ago in February of 2014, the kinds of things that Pompeo and the American ambassador to the Ukraine have been involved in publicly very recently in regard to a dangerous intervention, covert intervention on the part of the United States in basically paying off, it would appear, this so-called Orthodox patriarch in Constantinople to issue a decree that the Ukrainian Orthodox Church could simply break away from its historic overseers, which has been the Russian Orthodox Church, and then throwing, of course, into that mix in Ukraine, the open support of the United States. And this gets back to an article written by James Jotras about how the West is promoting LGBTQ policies in the Ukraine as a means of getting them on board with the New World Order, and ultimately using the Ukrainians on Putin's southern underbelly to engage in havoc with him and with his country. Pompeo and the American ambassador to the Ukraine, a Marie or Maria Yovashenko, I think is her name, but at any rate, on the official U.S. government embassy website in Ukraine, Pompeo lauds how wonderful it is that you have the Ukrainian Orthodox Church now, at least a percentage of it, breaking away from any formal ecclesiastical relationship with the Russian Orthodox Church. That's going to lead to stealing Russian Orthodox Church properties in the Ukraine. It's going to lead to the furtherance of the LGBTQ movement, both in Ukraine specifically, and what could be seen as a larger attempt to subvert, in particular, the Russian Orthodox Church on this LGBTQ issue, because the Russian Orthodox Church, of course, is putting the major underpinning for a renaissance in Russian nationalism under Putin that is not rooted in Jewish Bolshevism, but is rooted in a return to the older Russian Orthodox Christian culture in that country. All of this is involved in these acts of subversion, which, as I've noted many, many times on many, many shows, takes a variety of different forms: false spins in mainstream media, economic sanctions, subversion and coup d'etats within a given country, subverting their structures, subverting their legitimately nationalistic politicians in favor of those who can be bought off for the globalist cause, and then supporting through sexual perversion, frankly, of every conceivable stripe, supporting the division of a particular country's population to create a complacency and a decadence within that individual population that subsequently, if it's allowed to go on and to go on long enough, will begin to erode a particular country's public from being aware of what's happening to them and to their country or who's behind it. So this is a multi-tiered strategy in this particular juncture. And I think, again, getting back to the so-called progressive left's vote for this NATO Support Act in the House, if you've got 357 Democrats voting for this NATO Support Act, despite all of the economic and military and national security arguments to be made against it, the ones that Stockman makes that are up on the big board today at National Bugle, is it the understanding of the progressive left that the real agenda here is to bring the rest of the world into compliance with the Jewish banking system, bring the rest of the world in, the world into compliance with the LGBTQ agenda of the globalists and of the Democratic Party, and in essence, to engage in an all-out attack externally and from within using these methodologies that I've just talked about here to bring about their ultimate purposes. This is very evil business. Mm-hmm. And again, going back to this Russia Insider story by James Jotras, which we've got up on the big board, it's been up for a number of days now at National Bugle, the utilization of the LGBTQ movement in the Ukraine and working through an Orthodox patriarch in Constantinople who is not simply going along with the West in regard to trying to subvert the Russian Orthodox Church in the Ukraine, but this particular patriarch has also been suggesting publicly that the Orthodox Church should begin to moderate its stance on LGBTQ, and he was, of course, decrying the fact that the Russian Orthodox Church will have none of that. Mm-hmm. Those of you who are Roman Catholic listening to this and remembering what happened to your church with Vatican II and thereafter, and who was behind that, this is beginning to have a very familiar ring, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Now, I just want to say next month, President Trump is due to meet with Kim Jong-un of North Korea, and I'm bringing that up only because if he can manage to have foreign policy success there, it would give him more leeway in other places. It would show that making deals is better than making threats or certainly making war. Now, regarding this whole gayness business, I wonder exactly how much progress they think they're going to make spreading gayness in the Ukraine. I want to ask you, there's the issue itself, but then there's also the priority that issue gets in the agenda. So, having it on the agenda in the first place, but then also the priority. So, it's one thing for somebody to say, oh yeah, I support this or I support that. But they've really been raising the priority, raising the importance of LGBTQ, URS, TUP rights on the agenda. And I have noticed that young people, teenagers and people in their 20s in particular, who I guess over the past 15 years, especially if they've been through public school, but also through the media, have really been indoctrinated into thinking that, it's just naturally. These people have a right to marry. They have, what's wrong with it? There's nothing wrong with it, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's gotten an importance on their agenda that used to be reserved for, say, Roe versus Wade, which had a really perversely high importance among, say, I can understand the importance among, say, religious people who view it as murder, because murder is a big deal. But the importance it had on the left was I always thought it was kind of a distraction to keep people away from more important issues. But so the question is, do you have a feeling that they're pushing the LGBTQ rights issue in the Ukraine, not just because they want to spread gayness in the Ukraine, but also because they want to be able to justify war with among young people in America? They want, if they're going to go to war, well, why are we going to war? Well, you've got to support LGBTQ rights. It's just like you have to go to war to free the slaves, or you have to go to war to fight Hitler, or build a time machine and go back and kill baby Hitler. This is just the priority. Do you think there's some of that?
Yes, I do, and I think that is interlinked, frankly, with the overwhelming Jewish support for LGBTQ in this country and outside it. And when we look at this whole issue of LGBTQ, it's inextricably tied to something that I think you were hinting at here, and that's the educational system in the West, and how that is being used not only to promote LGBTQ, but to promote a globalist, non-nationalist, even anti-nationalist, and certainly anti-Christian worldview, although that's not necessarily spelled out. That's exactly what they're doing. And when I think of all of this, whether we're talking about external relationships between the United States and nation states, be it Syria, be it Iran, be it North Korea, where certainly it is not in our interest or theirs for a war to break out, it'll be interesting to see the so-called progressive left and how it may well attempt to subvert Trump's agenda for North Korea if it begins to move in a direction where the Donald might actually be credited with doing something statesmanlike that had ultimately profound positive implications for the future of the world and certainly for the future of Korea, potentially, hopefully, in the future, a unified Korea, and for the of American lives as well as Korean lives and Japanese lives and Chinese lives from a situation where if a war broke out, the results would simply be unthinkable. But I want to get back to this educational thing for a minute. There's a story out there at Russian Faith. Russian Faith is a website that has a Russian Orthodox priest who's an American. His name is Joseph Gleason. He's originally from Texas. He is now living and serving, as I understand it, as a Russian Orthodox priest in Russia. He lives, if I remember what he told me, in a city called Rostov the Great. Mm-hmm. And he has a number of children, a young man, very articulate fellow. And he and Charles Bousman of Russia Insider have both been presenting information to a global public and to an American public specifically that begins to get into the deeper implications of why it is that in the Western countries this has all happened, and how and why it is that the United States government in particular would be leading a global enablement mm-hmm. and empowerment of a LGBTQ movement mm-hmm. That certainly Russia is not interested in, presumably a considerable number of Ukrainian people are not interested yeah. in. And in all of this, we get back to the educational system.
Well, let's talk about the educational system on the other side of the break.
Sure.
Thank you.
far back. So, Mark, do continue with the education system.
Yeah, there, a classic example of this is Russian Faith, Joseph Gleason's site, has a story out there entitled Young Couple in Remote Village in Brazil Discovers Ancient Christianity, Gives Up Everything to Join Orthodox Church. Now, this is a young married couple in Brazil that left Calvinistic Christianity to become Orthodox Christians. But these folks are trying to move to Russia. And the reason they're trying to move to Russia, they're presently living, by the way, on about $250 a month, I'm told, in this remote village in South America. But they're moving to Russia. Why? Because they want children. Homeschooling is illegal in Brazil. This article is informing me.
Is it illegal in Brazil?
What's that?
Illegal in Brazil?
That's what Russian Faith is saying. Joseph Gleason's site is saying. And the government schools aggressively push the homosexual agenda. Now, this is obviously what's going on in the United States as well. And to me, interestingly enough, when you start looking at the role that Brazil is playing in the BRICS organization, right? Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, that particular block of countries working to get the world away from the monopoly role being played by the American dollar is the reserve currency of the world. It nonetheless is striking to me that this article is telling me that in Brazil, both with the homosexual movement as well as the banning of homeschooling and so forth, there is the same type of situation apparently in Brazil that exists in the United States. The globalists take over the domestic educational system of a particular country. They utilize it for however many years necessary to break down all of the traditions and to break down the religious strictures and the theological belief system of people in a society that don't even know what's going on. This young couple has figured it out in Brazil, apparently. And that's what leads to the kind of blindness to where a lot of kids in the United States have really no idea about up to and including why it is that this democratic progressive left movement that many of these kids are enamored of is nonetheless supporting, by unanimous vote in the House of Representatives, the NATO Support Act, which basically will allow NATO to continue as a global force for globalism, a global force for Zionism, a global force for an ideology that at least in the Christian community, if they understood it properly, would be seen as Antichrist. So there again, we get back to the tier of things that are done to subvert a particular country and the particular people in a country. Military aggression, if everything else fails, economic sanctions, cultural and social subversion from within, and then, of course, the capturing of mainstream media so that in a particular country, like the Ukraine, where all this pro-homosexual stuff is being promoted by a so-called new Ukrainian press service, we're told by James Jotras, that is being financed by the United States Agency for International Development, ho, 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 you know what that means, folks, being supported by the German embassy, right? The Germans are putting money into this Ukrainian media outfit. Why? And when you look at that story that Jotras has on Russia Today, which we have reposted, you begin to see what, at least in the Christian community, would be seen as the tentacles of the beast.
Yeah. Wow, Mark, thank you so much for joining us again today. You always bring so much good information that other people aren't talking about.
Very good. Take a look at the big board, folks. Philip Drawley's got a new piece on the Israeli wall, A Tale of Two Walls. Congress prefers the Israeli version. Take a look at that one. And then my interview with Trad Cat Knight, the most widely listened to traditional Catholic network in the country, had me on several days ago where we were talking about some of these issues. You can listen to that by going to our site at National Bugle, going to Other News, and seeing what's there. You can find the link to actually listen to that show.
Right, and thank you for everything you're doing for NationalBugle.com, the news site. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.